afternoon now. We are calling the House Education Finance Committee to order. We have a quorum. Well, it's still morning, I guess, starting a little late. So we are going to do what we tell our kids in kindergarten and as part of social emotional learning is we are going to be super flex today. So we are going to be changing some of the agenda around. And I figured if our kindergartners can handle that, so can you. So here we go. We are going to start with the minutes. Representative Purcell, have you had a chance to look at the minutes?
I have, Madam Chair. I move to approve the minutes from yesterday, March 7th.
Thank you. Representative Purcell moves to approve the minutes for March 7th. Are there any questions on the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The minutes for March 7th are adopted. Members, we have a full agenda today. I am not sure if we will get through it. We are looking at time for tonight, rolling into tonight. What we are going to do, though, is since all five of our bills have to do with PELSB, or I should say the Professional Educator Licensing Standards Board that we lovingly call PELSB, we are going to have them, and they are being super flex today, too, present on overview of all five bills. And then I know there's a lot of you in the room that want to testify, and we want to be respectful of your time. So we will be moving to testimony on the bills then. And then we will go back and start the bills. So that is what we're doing today. And with that, we will turn it over to PELSB. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members
of the sorry, Dr. Bailey, I'm so sorry. I forgot to mention we are able to go to 12:30 today, and then we're still looking at 10 tonight. Dr. Bailey, proceed.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Dr. Elena Bailey. I am the executive director, almost said interim, but no longer, the executive director of PELSB, and we will try to be as brief as possible here to give you a walkthrough of the five bills. So for HF 1138, this establishes a statewide teacher residency program that would pilot supporting 400 teacher candidates by completing robust teacher residencies. So what that is a one-year-long program where they receive intensive mentorship and they are paid a living wage of $40,000 to complete that intensive mentorship and clinical experience or student teaching. It would provide $3,000 for tuition for each of those candidates, and it's a grant to our teacher preparation providers, so it would prioritize providers who can cover the rest of that tuition for them. So the idea being that they have the free cost of tuition and a paid living wage to spend a year of intensive mentorship and student teaching experience before they enter the profession. It also provides a $3,500 stipend for the teacher mentor that participates in that program. And then finally, a one-time funding of $50,000 to contract with an outside organization to mentor those teacher preparation providers to help them as they develop their teacher residency programs. This, we will say, is to establish and help with issues of retention, which research show teacher residencies particularly support our teachers of color staying in the profession beyond that 3 to 5 year threshold.
Hello, my name is Michelle Hirschbott, and I am the rulemaking attorney at the Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board. We might have skipped. There we are. I am going to walk through HF 1137, which is a bill that would create a specific licensure program pathway for heritage language and culture educators. When I refer to a heritage language and culture educator, I'm referring to a teacher with a connection to a community's language and culture who uses that connection and language proficiency to support students as they learn academic language and language of that community as well as that culture. This would create a clear pathway for these educators who currently don't have the best pathway to a Tier 2 license or a Tier 3 due to limited programming opportunities across the state. So it would create funding and support for 50 teachers through a year-long portfolio process. Funding would be there to support fees, substitute teachers, mentorship, and would also support a new staff liaison position at PELSB.
The last thing I'll mention to clarify the purpose of this is this would be essentially a free expedited pathway for our heritage language educators. So educators who speak Hmong, Somali, Spanish, educators of color to get free expedited pathway to licensure.
And Dr. Bailey, I know we're short on time, but I want you to still say what you need to say on each of the bills. Don't feel like you have to rush. It's important information that I think also the testifiers in this room should hear as well.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you for that, Madam Chair. So for HF 1257, this is what we're calling removing barriers to licensure bill. So this does a number of things. And so as you're seeing a pattern here, we're trying to support our teachers and keep them in the profession. Paid teacher residency, $40,000 a year to do that year-long clinical experience. A free expedited pathway for a heritage language. And then removing barriers we know that affect our teachers, particularly our teachers of color. So Section 1 removes the requirement that an individual hold an innovative program commission, that they have to renew that annually. So a lot of our alternative schools, for example, they have to do this annually, which is just an added burden for them. Sections 2, 5, 7, and 9 provide a BA exemption for visual and performing arts, as well as native speakers of world languages. So we had great educators in our classrooms that used to be called community experts. And with the introduction of the tiered licensure system, they were no longer allowed to receive a license and be in our classrooms. So this would provide a pathway to bring all of those educators back into our classrooms. And it would provide it so they can move up the tiers 1 through 4. Sections 3, 4, 6, and 8 are just to help clarify the application process. So this helps with districts and applicants for Tier 1 and Tier 2, particularly with kind of data sharing to help facilitate and speed up that application process. And then to help our educators who need a visa to come work in the United States so we can process their application early so they can actually get their visa and come here and serve our students. Section 10 helps with out-of-state teachers. Currently, you could have served 20 years in Wisconsin and come here and you have to get a Tier 3 license, which doesn't honor the experience of those educators. So Section 10 would rectify that. Sections 11 and 12 remove our licensure exams. For all individuals who completed teacher preparation in Minnesota or who've done the licensure via portfolio process, and it also removes requirements for teacher preparation providers to give that tutoring, because if you're removing the testing requirements, they don't need that tutoring as well. This, we know, ample amounts of research, and you have a handout on this show, that there is no correlation between licensure exams and teacher effectiveness. We have about 835 teachers on a Tier 2 license who are there simply because they cannot pass their licensure exams. They've completed teacher preparation, they are qualified, they are prepared, and 30% of those are teachers of color. So when we talk about removing the structures that keep our teachers of color out of the profession, this is a barrier we are intending to remove, and we know that it'll have an intense impact on our teachers and be a benefit to our students. Section 13 helps with short call subs by piloting a program that would allow individuals who are in those classrooms serving our students, our ESPs, our paraprofessionals, as well as other individuals who hold AA degrees, to come and receive, be eligible, I should say, for a short call sub license. And then finally, sections 14 through 16 just modify our existing grant programs. We have two grants, the CUGMET grant and the teacher mentorship grant, that are focused on both getting in and keeping our teachers in the profession with a prioritization of teachers of color. So this just helps amplify those programs.
HF 1268 is our bill that the bill we refer to as Operational Excellence. Its intent is to clarify a lot of our licensure processes and terms in order to allow our board to do its work, day-to-day work, more smoothly and clearly for both our staff and the public. So throughout, you'll see a lot of things like updating terminology. An easy example of that would be moving the word candidate to applicant. So those are types of examples.
Michelle Vaught, can you pull the microphone a tiny bit closer so we can hear you better? Thank you.
Thank you. So I will go section through section, but we're happy to take any specific questions.
Do you want section by section, or we could give a... Okay.
Is that okay? Section 1 clarifies our board duties, specifically our requirement to license teachers. Sections 2 to 10, again, updates definitions. Sections 11 and 12 is a policy change. It modifies our board membership in order to obtain two additional teacher members and establishes a $4,800 annual stipend for our board members. I will flag that much of our board work falls on our teacher members. For example, only our ethics work can be done by our teacher board members. So we see this as an important provision to allowing our board to operate as required under law and do its duties. Section 13 removes a requirement around office space that has already been completed and met. Section 14 would require our board to reimburse school districts for substitute teachers required to replace our board members during days that they are coming to board meetings or committee meetings. Section 15 is a requirement for public employers to give board members time off for board meetings. 16 through 18, again, clarifies our board duties around program approval, having a register of licensed teachers, and our rulemaking. Section 19, again, updates terminology. That word applicant will come up quite a bit. Sections 20 through 21 streamlines data and reporting requirements. 22 through 24, again, updates terminology. Again, not policy changes. This is terminology changes. Section 25 corrects incorrect citation. Section 26, again, updates terminology. Section 27 clarifies board duties again, adding in our requirements around the STAR reporting. Sections 28 through 40, again, updates to terminology and process. 41 and 42 provides directions on the nomination process and, again, appropriations for that member stipend. And then finally, Section 43 is our repealer.
All right, on to the last bill. So HF 1224 includes modifications to tiered licensure. Section 1 would modify eligibility for a Tier 2 license to align with enrollment and teacher preparation, which is a current requirement, and expertise, which is a current requirement, so having that MA or equivalent. It does not remove the other pathways. It simply places them on the Tier 1. So it doesn't change those teachers' ability to be in the classroom. It just changes what type of license they will hold. I will add that in those Tier 1 licenses, because if anyone holds a license in a shortage area, they can renew indefinitely, so it doesn't limit their ability to continue to renew and hold those positions in classrooms. Section 2 maintains that all pathways to a Tier 2 license for teachers who already hold a Tier 2 legacy license. So what that means is that for current individuals who have a Tier 2 license and may be looking to use the experience pathway, they can still use that pathway. They are not having that removed from their options. Section 3 removes a pathway to full professional license based on experience alone. So this ensures that all people in our classrooms, all teachers, have demonstrated meeting the standards of the profession in order to serve the students in Minnesota. They can do that through a number of pathways. One is through traditional higher ed teacher preparation. Second is through alternative providers, which are not degree granting. And then the third is through licensure via portfolio, which is performance-based. So we will hear from some great testifiers on the assessments they've gotten from their administrators, for example, the experience they have, the professional certification and licenses. Those are all things that would be submitted to us, and reviewers would look at them for portfolio, and it would get them their Tier 3 license. So it would use those experiences and those evaluations and assessments and lesson plans and give them that pathway to a professional license. So it's just changing putting people through that innovative pathway, not taking away their ability to get a full license without going to teacher preparation. Section 4, that's another legacy license pathway. And then Section 5 provides $800,000 in funding for districts so that they can take all those Tier 2 teachers and get them either enrolled in prep or through the licensure via portfolio process. So currently we have about 1,100 Tier 2 teachers who aren't enrolled in teacher preparation, haven't completed teacher preparation. This funding is enough to get all of them through the licensure via portfolio process. So there is ample funding here to make sure that nobody misses out on their opportunity to get their full professional license. I will highlight, you can move to this, part of what we say when we talk about the standards of profession, Pell Speed just finished a 3.5-year-long project where we worked with thousands of teachers, educators, parents, and community members to draft standards of the teaching profession, where teachers and educators and parents said, this is what our teachers need to know to serve our students. So when we talk about what this change is doing, it's ensuring that everyone who has that professional license to be able to teach in any classroom across the state of Minnesota, renew indefinitely, meets that commitment that teachers and parents have said, we want our students, our teachers, to be prepared to serve our students in these ways. We'll just address a couple of misconceptions that often come tied to these changes. One is, again, that we're removing teachers from the classroom. No one is being removed. No pathways are being removed. It simply shifts where along the tier licensure pathway and structure someone may receive their license. Second is that these changes harm teachers of color. So as you've heard in the other bills presented to you today, Pellsby believes that there need to be changes to the structural barriers that teachers of color face. So testing, financial barriers, these are structural barriers that are being proposed, policies here to remove those. But we also affirm that every person of color has the capacity to meet standards. We can do that through alternative means. We can do that through portfolio, right? We can do that through alternative prep. It doesn't have to be through traditional pathways, but we as people of color are capable. And I say this as someone who we'll hear from students who have a similar background. Someone shared, I think last week, a student grew up single-parent family, public assistance, public housing. I was that kid, and I went through our public school system, and someone believed in my capacity, and I stand before you here with a PhD, the executive director of Pelsby, because I can meet standards, as can every other person of color in this room. But we need other structures that help people to meet those standards. So I just want to address that in particular. The last is that these changes fail to consider district hiring concerns. Again, this bill does not change districts' ability to hire Tier 1 and Tier 2 teachers, and our other bills actually make it easier for them to do that more quickly. If you can go to the next slide, I'll be quick. This is one quick image to show you the dozens and dozens of shortage areas we have, so that folks that are moved to a Tier 1 in any one of these areas, including a few other dozen that aren't listed here, can renew indefinitely. So, again, no one is being pushed out of the classroom. Go to the next slide. This gives you a picture of our teachers that were in classrooms last year and of the individuals who got their Tier 3 license through that experience pathway. They make up that small sliver, that 0.2% of our classroom teachers. So just to give you a sense, not that those teachers don't matter, but to say it's a small enough group that I can walk individually with each one of those 99 people and help them get their license through the pathways we know they can do. The last images here show you particularly the impact on BIPOC teachers. So of the 99 teachers who obtained their licensure via the experience pathway, only 17 were people of color or indigenous people. And this shows you the picture of them compared to teachers who would obtain their license if we did something like remove the licensure exams. And then finally, it shows you the small sliver out of all of our BIPOC classroom teachers that these make up. The last thing I'll say, and then we'll be done, is that I want to put on the record, you're going to hear from some amazing testifiers on this bill in particular, teachers, parents, classroom students who are going to advocate for these amazing teachers who bring unique skills and backgrounds and have a Tier 2 license. We agree and affirm that all of those teachers deserve to be in the classroom. But it is our job here at Pelsby to take the long view, to take research and expertise, to advocate for policies we know don't just get them there, let them be burned up and used up, but keep them in the classroom. So residency programs, funding, having preparation and meeting standards, we can guarantee you based off of research, that is what's going to keep them there for 10, 20, 30 years so they can have an impact on students for a longer period. So it's not the popular view, but it's the right view, and we want to put that on the record as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Bailey, and thank you, Michelle Vaught. With that, members, like I said before, we're going to be super flex today, so we are going to have testifiers on each of the bills come up. So I'm going to start out with House File 1137, and how we're going to do this is we're going to have the testifiers come up one at a time for each of the bills so we can hear everybody that has come today and expected to be done by 12:30 and probably has other things to do. And then we will have time to go back and start on the individual bills for member discussion and questions and then laying over. So that is how we're gonna move forward. Does anybody have quick clarifying questions on that agenda? I also want to acknowledge, too, that you have all the handouts. I know we went through this rather quickly. I am a visual learner myself, so the handouts are in your packets, including I requested that all these five bills, they work as a package. So I wanted folks to see that visual change in the pathways or the adjustments in the pathways, and so that they could see that all on one piece of paper. So there you have a draft version of that in your packet as well, or on top of your packet. So, and then the paper that Dr. Bailey mentioned is also in your packet as well. So with that, we're going to go to the public testifier for House File 1137, Hang Vong. She's remote. And we're going to try to keep testifiers under 2 minutes because we are members going to come back and finish our work tonight. We're working on that right now. So with that, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Nyajong, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Bang Yang, a Hmong language teacher in the Osceola School District and the co-executive director of Minnesota Zhejiang with Dr. Jenna Cushing-Lubner. I'm here in support of increasing the numbers of heritage and language culture teachers. Last year, in collaboration with Dr. Cassandra Glenn at Concordia College Moorhead in Pelsby, we piloted a program with over a dozen Hmong language teachers who will be getting their world language license with an emphasis in the Hmong language this fall. We would love to include Somali, Karen, Chinese, and other less commonly taught language teachers in the program if funded. Working with less commonly taught language teachers, I know that heritage language teachers are very passionate, working extended hours, creating curriculum that doesn't exist, and play multiple roles to ensure students' needs are met even after work hours. Furthermore, creating pathways that are obtainable and removing barriers to licensure, along with other support, we can ensure less burnout. When we support heritage language teachers to reach their fullest potential, more heritage teachers will see the language field as an opportunity for them to join the field. It is a win-win for all.
Thank you so much. Next up, we have for House File 1138, we have three public testifiers, Jim Grothwell, Sine Yabo Sempang, I am so sorry, I butchered that name, and Susan Hang. First up, Jim Grothwell, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, members, Jim Grothwell, St. Paul Public Schools, strongly in support of House File 1138. Want to thank the author for bringing this forward and for all the reasons enunciated by the Pelsby team and all the reasons about to be enunciated by my companion here. And all the data in the handout we have given you, just really strong results in the St. Paul Urban Teachers Program. We'd like to ask you to include this in the, lay this over for inclusion in the omnibus bill. Over to Sin.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair and representatives, my name is Sunny Yaboa Sampong. I am here as a part of the St. Paul Urban Teacher Residency, otherwise known as SUTER, out of the University of St. Thomas. I want to say that I was born and raised in Minneapolis, Minnesota. I'm a product of Minneapolis Public Schools. I've been through the Minsky system at Minneapolis Community and Technical College, and I am now on the cusp of obtaining my master's in special education, and I'm going to be seeking employment in the St. Paul Public Schools as of next fall. Yeah, I didn't have SUTER, I don't think I would have even... I wouldn't have even been able to imagine that it was possible for me to become an actual licensed educator, that I could have even possibly made a career out of this. I became a para in 2018, and after 2020, I felt that I was obliged to use my fullest potential to better serve the students whom I worked with and who I saw fighting so hard for themselves and for me and for everyone else in all of my communities. Without SUTER, however, though, I wouldn't have had access to the community, the financial, academic, and institutional resources to imagine that I could become a successful educator in this state or these cities. And that's based on my personal experiences, what I know about teacher retention, and what I've seen as far as all types of outcomes. I am glad that I'm in a program that has allowed me to receive the kind of culturally responsive instruction that I would have preferred to have had at a lot earlier stages of my education. And I would like to see this work expanded. I would like to see more students have the opportunity to deal with more teachers who come from less traditional, less expected, from a wider spectrum of backgrounds, from a wider spectrum of experiences, who can bring their whole selves, people who might not necessarily find themselves in this work, who might not necessarily think that there's a place for them in this work. I'd want them to see this as a possibility. I'd want them to know that they could take a risk like I've taken, knowing that they had the support to sustain themselves physically, mentally, spiritually, communally. And I just know that if I didn't have this, I would have, this would still just be a dream. This would still just be a thing I was maybe thinking about doing. So I hope that you'll follow through with this. I think that this is absolutely necessary, for the integrity of this democracy, honestly.
Thank you.
For the sake of this economy and everything. I'm sorry.
Thank you. No, I appreciate your passion, and I want to say thank you. From the bottom of my heart, for going into special education. We need wonderful teachers like you there. And I'm a para in with kiddos with special needs too, so just thank you. Next up, we have Susan Hang, remote. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, morning, I just wanted to say,
oh, Mr.
just
Grappo?
Wanted to say briefly, we also support House File 1257, and leave it at that. Thank you.
Thank you. Sorry about that. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Chair and members. I am Susan Hang, and I'm the Recruitment Retention Manager for Osseo Area Schools. And I'm honored to be here today to speak in regards to Osseo's support of the bill in establishing a pilot program for the Teacher Residency Grant. Osseo Area Schools is Minnesota's fifth largest school district with over 20,000 students. Approximately 60% of our students are students of color, while 9% of our teachers are teachers of color. An Osseo school is a mirror of an urban school district. My role in the district is to support the district in recruiting and retaining staff. For the last few years, our district has hired over 100 teachers each year, and we will continue to recruit, hire, and retain. The challenges to recruit and retain teachers intensifies each year because of the teacher shortages and other workforce factors. The need for our district to access diverse talent is critical. This bill would not only prepare teacher candidates and with the focus on people of color and American Indian candidate, but also will provide this financial support system to support the candidates in successfully obtaining their teaching licensure and their growing in their career. As a potential district partner, the Teacher Residency Grant is a strategic pathway to recruit and retain teachers of color. We are committed to serving our current and future scholars to have access to qualified and diverse teachers. And so with that, it is important that we continue to support bills and funds that put the future, that put our future teachers at the center. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you so much. Next up, we have testifiers for House File 1257. And with that, the public testifiers, we have Dr. Stephen Nunowski.
Thank you, Chair Joachim. Steve Yanowski, Superintendent, Richfield Public Schools. I am also a member of the Pelsby Board, and I am here in support of the removal of barriers, House File 1257. I want to specifically talk about one component because it's the controversial component, apparently, which is the removal of testing in terms of getting a teacher license. You know, I'm a career educator. My family is career educators. My wife is a career educator. And my daughter, who's a 17-year-old student who will be going to college this year, is the unlucky or lucky child of educators who talk about it at every meal. As I had breakfast this morning with my daughter, we were talking about her going off to college, and she talked about not having to take the ACT. And she asked me a question because she knew I was coming to the legislature today, and she goes, "Well, Dad, the ACT has literally nothing to do with whether or not kids are successful in college. Zero. There's zero correlation between the ACT and college." And I see people nodding their heads and accepting that. We all have accepted that. And she says, "Dad, colleges get it. So why, since you're going to talk about testing for teachers, why do people have to take a test to become a teacher when that also has literally nothing to do with effective instruction?" And so I'm going to hit just briefly the connection between this particular test and education. There is zero correlation between a score on this particular test, the basic skills test, and teaching instruction. There is basically zero correlation between this particular test and reading outcomes for students. There is zero correlation between teacher effectiveness on the basic skills test and literally anything that has to do in the classroom. And so I'm hoping that we can move this bill forward, and then eventually I'll have an explanation for my daughter about why higher ed gets it in removal of arbitrary tests, and hopefully we get it too. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Nunowski. Next up, we have House File 1224, Public Testifiers, which has the biggest list. And I'm going to start calling people up at a time, and if they're not in the room because there were some folks in the hallway, if you hear me call for you, just feel free to come in and we'll work you in. So first up, we have Kulia Pringle. That I saw you there. Great. Just settle in and state your name for the record and proceed.
Okay. Good morning, Madam Chair.
Good morning.
Members of the committee, my name is Kulia Pringle, and I am the Minnesota State Director for the National Parents Union. And I'm here to express my concern around components of House File 1224. I asked many parents, do you know anything about how teachers get licensed? Most said no. When asked, what do you think about the diverse teachers available to your child? Most answered, I know there's a lot of teachers who are not white. There's not a lot of teachers who are not white. When asked, what do you think about the alternative, an alternative way to licensure to recruit more teachers of color? Many responded, that sounds great. I asked if, what if the only way to become a teacher was a traditional way of, a traditional teacher prep program? And most overwhelmingly responded, whose tradition? Parents may not be experts on teacher licensure, but they can understand common sense. The elimination of the teacher licensure pathway would create unnecessary barriers to future teacher candidates. I went through a traditional teacher prep program, and I loved my experience. Big up Metro State Urban Teacher Prep Program. I know the many barriers the pathway that I took should not be the only way. Creating more barriers to becoming a teacher is not what we need right now. We need more pathways for licensure. Statewide, 6.2% of Minnesota teachers are teachers of color or indigenous. The status quo isn't working. The tiered system has been in effect for a few years, and every year tier two has been under attack. I will leave you with this ask. Please work with community to solve the teacher shortage and do not create unnecessary barriers to those who want to work with our children. Thank you.
Next up, we have Matt Shaver at Allies. On deck is Laura Mogelson and then Emmy Higgins-Matzner. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Chair Joachim, members of the committee, good morning. My name is Matt Shaver. I'm a teacher with a Tier 4 license, and I'm the policy director at Allies. I'm here to testify in opposition to the policy aspects of House File 1224. Thank you to Representative Hill and committee members for listening to our feedback today. This bill would eliminate a pathway to a permanently renewable license and pathways to being able to qualify for a Tier 2 license. These pathways, as currently constituted, are helping to diversify the teacher workforce and address teacher shortages. With the amendment, some of the harm of these proposals will be pushed out a few years, but will still have a negative impact on an immeasurable number of potential future teachers starting next year. In a state where just 6 out of every 100 teachers identify as a person of color, the current pathways have made it so that 1 out of every 4 teachers with a Tier 2 license is a person of color. This bill will disrupt the pathways to the classroom for future diverse educators. According to Pelsby's 21-22 assignment data, there are dozens, and in some of your cases, hundreds of Tier 2 teachers in the school districts members of this committee represent. If this bill passes a few months from now, someone with the exact same qualifications as many of the Tier 2 teachers in your communities would not qualify for a Tier 2 license. We've heard that only 99 teachers have used the experience pathway in 5 years. This neglects to mention that for the first 3 years of tiered licensure, no Tier 2 teacher was eligible to use that pathway because you had to teach 3 years first. So to be clear, 99 educators have used this pathway so far in 2 years. 17% identified as teachers of color. And if you look at the data on page 16 of the 2023 Supply and Demand Report, up to 1,100 more teachers could use this experience pathway in the next 3 years. This bill closes the door behind them. Still, 17 may not seem like a lot, but what this committee has heard from kids over and over again has been that encountering even one teacher of color has meant the world to many students. In the next few years, about 200 teachers of color could use this experience pathway. Not enough time in my testimony to discuss the challenges of the portfolio, downsides of pushing teachers down to Tier 1 license, and some needed additional context on the standards of effective practice, but I'll be here available for other questions. At Allies, we would encourage the committee to keep the funding components of this bill and drop the policy. And I want to thank you all for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. And this is the point where I do a shout out to the Coalition Around the Teachers of Color and Indigenous Act that has increased our teachers of color from 2% to 6% in 10 years from our investments that we hope to make more investments in next year. With that, Laura Mogelson.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Laura Mogelson, and I am here from the Minnesota Association of Colleges of Teacher Education. We are in support of House File 1224. Research shows that the preparation a teacher receives impacts how much kids learn. In Minnesota, we have named incredibly important knowledge and skills that teachers need to learn in their preparation programs. These things are important for all teachers. We should not have an option that allows some teachers to bypass this learning. The Tier 2 to Tier 3 pathway without meeting standards does not require teachers to demonstrate they're fully prepared. The idea that all Tier 2 teachers will always encounter and learn everything the state requires in 3 years of teaching is simply not accurate. We know that there are hundreds of teachers of special education students in Tier 2 positions. We know they are doing good work, but we also know how specialized the teaching methods are and how technical the legal requirements are. The consequences of not having thoroughly prepared special education teachers would be enormous for our most vulnerable children, and the fiscal impact is a major risk. Preparation programs prepare teachers to be successful in many school contexts with children from many different backgrounds. Why have requirements for teachers at all if some aren't required to follow them? Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Emmy Higgins-Matzner. Then we'll have Alicia Mansera and Nafisa Muhammad. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Emmy Higgins-Matzner. Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm the parent of a child who attends Minneapolis Public Schools. In MPS, 184 of our teachers have Tier 2 licenses, and half of them are teachers of color. I'd like to share a statement with you from one of those educators, a Black woman named Trina Lyon. Hello, my name is Trina Lyon. I am a school counselor at Lucy Craft Laney. I have my master's degree in counseling and psychological services. I have always been passionate about building up our next generation. Prior to joining my school family at Laney, I was a social worker in Hennepin County. Along my journey, I have also worked with high school students on developing effective leadership skills, children who were removed from their homes due to safety concerns, provided school-based mental health at the elementary level in St. Paul, provided counseling to survivors of sexual assault, and provided counseling to students in the Juvenile Detention Center in downtown Minneapolis. My educational and professional background mean I bring a unique skill set to the work I do here at Laney. I am not just another face or name to my students and colleagues. I am Mrs. Lyon, someone they can confide in. Our children need more people who look like them in positions of leadership, modeling what success looks like. My Tier 2 licensure does not say that I am ill-equipped for the work that I do. However, it does say that I have a skill set that sets me apart and allows me to approach school counseling through a different lens. I implore you to focus on ways to support qualified folks like Mrs. Lyon to become thriving educators without cutting off pathways that are already working. Please don't make changes that limit the ability of future educators to obtain Tier 2 licenses or move from Tier 2 to Tier 3 after proving successful on the job. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Next up, we have Nafisa Muhammad. Oh, sorry, Alicia Mazard. And Nafisa Muhammad, why don't you come up at the same time so we can keep moving along. And Alicia, if you want to go first. Just state your name for the record and proceed.
Hello. My name is Alicia Monserrate, and I am currently a Tier 2 Social Studies Facilitator at Exploration High School. Like many, I began my career in education through a rather non-traditional route. It took me several years after receiving my bachelor's degree to find my way into education. I began my teaching career on a Tier 1 license. After I moved to teach social studies, I enrolled in a Minnesota Education Master's program and moved up the tiers to become a Tier 2 teacher. Many people, especially educators of color, follow these non-traditional pathways to enter the classroom. I recognize the immense amount of privilege that I have that has allowed me to pursue this particular path, which is costing me some $30,000 and 3.5 years of my time. I work at an incredible school where I have the support of my colleagues and students, some 30 who are here in this room and in the hallway, in support of me and opposition of this bill. These students should be receiving more, not less of my time. They get to see me, a first-generation college graduate, queer Latina educator. They rarely get to see people like me as teachers and leaders in their lives, and for many people with similar backgrounds, they may not have the same support that I have that make teaching a viable profession. The real work of learning happens on the job. Coaching, mentoring, and high-quality professional development supports are what teachers like me need to be elevated in this profession. Eliminating licensure pathways tells current and future educators who use these non-traditional paths that those experiences in the classroom aren't valued. That because they don't have a master's degree or finished an expensive preparation program, they aren't capable of doing this work. This bill, should it pass, prevents the classroom from being enriched by lived experiences from educators that can do this work, who are currently proving they can do this work and do it well. We Tier 2 license holders may not be currently at risk, but we are firsthand examples of why these pathways is crucial and why I believe it is so important to keep them open for those who wish to follow. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Go ahead. Next up, state your name for the record and proceed.
Nafisa Muhammad for the record. Good morning, Madam Chair, Vice Chair, and committee members and guests. My name is Nafisa Muhammad, and I am a high school English teacher taking a time out. After 8 years of teaching in a toxic work environment, getting paid less to do more, and going on strike, I decided to take a mental health break. I heard Dr. Bailey talk about burnout. It's true. I am extremely burnt out by a white-dominated workforce who went through a teacher prep program, who are unprepared to work with black and brown children and their black and brown teacher colleagues. I now get to support teachers as Deputy Director of Campaigns at Educators for Excellence, supporting teachers who are fighting to have a say about what equity and justice looks like for them in their profession and their classrooms. I'm here to testify in opposition to ending the Tier 2 to Tier 3 licensure pathway for experienced teachers who entered the profession through doors that have been previously closed to them, like Veronica Castillo's, kindergarten teacher at Countryside Spanish Dual Immersion Schools, who said, "We hope that you are persuaded to see us, to see other teachers like me as a valuable asset in the education system. We seek your support in recognizing our legitimate academic background and our experience as educators. Pell's being named all the money they are proposing to pour into eliminating barriers to teachers of color. I support all the bills that remove barriers for teachers of color from entering the profession. The current tier licensure system is not a barrier. The system is. Money will never replace taking a person's right to choose what works best for them, especially if this traps them in a Tier 1 license. I'm having a deja vu of a Civil Rights Act of 1964 moment, which prohibited segregation and discrimination based on race in public facilities, including school. It let the black children in, but left the black teachers out. It left out all the cultural norms and epistemologies. It left out all those effective cultural approaches to curriculum and pedagogy. And as a result, in 2023, the education system is scrambling to put black teachers and other teachers of color back into the classroom without changing the system, scrambling to fill in the gaps that traditional pathways created through discrimination. You are repeating the same discriminatory history. It's your way or no way. I couldn't imagine telling my students that. It sounds extremely counterintuitive to the way human beings learn. Thank you.
Thank you. I want to note that I gave you 3 minutes. Members, please try to keep it to a minute 30. Next up, we have Melissa Clark Larson, then Jose Perez, and Paul Pelletier. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
I'm Melissa Clark Larson, and I'm the parent of two kids who attend Minneapolis Public Schools, and I'd like to share a statement from Heather Fry, the principal of Franklin Middle School in the north side of Minneapolis. In my role as a teacher and now principal, I've always adapted lessons for educators and students based on their learning needs. Educators call this differentiation. As a coach of teachers, I'm guiding them to also make these adaptations to provide a pathway so all learners can meet their goals. The Tier 2 license is that same ideology in the form of a licensure program. Regardless of how a teacher became a teacher, their pathway is unique and needs to reflect the needs of the person obtaining the degree and license. My school has 6 teachers with Tier 2 licenses. 5 of them are teachers of color. As a principal of a school identified by the state of Minnesota as racially isolated, I cannot sit idly by and have a system that gave my students the vital experience of having teachers that look like them dismantled. Why would we dismantle a system that is working during a nationwide teacher shortage? We have qualified teachers and educators that need different options to be able to be with students. At my school, 52% of licensed teachers are teachers of color. Of those, 38% are operating on a Tier 2 license. After my Tier 2 teachers have successfully taught under my leadership for 3 years, they deserve the benefits and respect a Tier 3 license would provide. This proposed change negatively impacts 20% of my teachers, 83% of whom are teachers of color. It also hampers my ability to continue hiring qualified and excellent teachers of color. These numbers tell the story of how negatively House File 1224 would impact my students and their access to education.
Thank you.
Thank you, Principal Larson. Next up, we have Jose Perez, and then we have Paul Petir on remote, and then Tony Simmons. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Jose Roberto Perez for the record. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members of this committee. My name is Jose Perez. I'm a first-generation high school graduate, a former St. Paul Public School student, and I am the partner of policy for Bridgemakers, a statewide youth-led organization focused on supporting innovative education. I'm here to voice our deep concerns that are shared by a broad coalition of organizations, activists with lived experience and Minnesota schools and communities. Preventing this new barrier to teaching is Bridgemakers' number one policy priority this session. For youth from underserved backgrounds like our members, learning success depends on educators able to deeply connect and engage with us. The teachers who made the most impact for us would have not been able to stay in teaching if House File 1224 had been in place. 1224's closures of the non-traditional pathways to tier licensures would significantly reduce Minnesota's teachers of color, especially teachers from under-resourced backgrounds, as it would eliminate pathways to long-term teaching for teachers unable to make a commitment to an expensive, time-intensive teacher preparation program on top of full-time teaching and family commitments. This bill would negatively impact the same teachers that mentored me as a first-generation dyslexic English language learner that had failed the first and ninth grade into a young nonprofit community leader that is a high school graduate and has the honor and privilege of saying that I've served on St. Paul City Council's Legislative Advisory Committee for Reparations and Ramsey County's Transforming Systems Together Committee. Please oppose House File 1224. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Next up, we have Paul Peltier remote. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Hi, everybody. Can you hear me?
Yep. Just speak up a little bit louder.
Thank you. Chair Joachim and members of House Finance, my name is Paul Peltier. I'm a band and choir teacher in Fauston and one of only two current board teacher members on Pelsby. I'm speaking to you today to help pass 1224. We've heard a lot of passionate testimony today on the policy side of things, but I want to focus on the financial side. Pelsby, in this case, is putting the money where everyone else's mouth is. Let me say that again. We're putting our money where everyone else's mouth is. We are asking for funding to fund teachers up the tiers. You've heard the policy argument, but let's talk about the preparation gap. Who wants to argue with me that we should not spend $800,000 to train Tier 1 and Tier 2 teachers so that they stay? So that they stay and they're effective? Anyone? Perhaps I'm being too confrontational. Is that too cocaine bear for this committee? I hope not. We are proposing giving you money to finish the preparation. Some of this is cultural competency that teachers lack. Some of this is pedagogic training that teachers lack. All important things. And different teachers come with different skill sets. This is to help fill the gaps in everybody's skill set. You heard about under-resourced teachers. I would argue that $800K is a small price to pay to get our Tier 1 and Tier 2 teachers the things they need. We have the money. Let's move current educators up the tiers with the funding we already have. Let's pass 1224 and help these teachers complete prep so that they have all of the tools, even though they bring many amazing things, all the tools they need to stay. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we've got Tony Simmons, and then Julian Spencer, and then Caitlin Snyder. Tony Simmons, and then when Julian Spencer also come up to the table at the same time, and then Caitlin Snyder too, so we're ready to go. Thank you. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Just one moment. I am Julian Spencer. I think Tony couldn't make it today.
Okay, thank you.
I will. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Julian Spencer. I'm 19, a policy fellow for Youth Prize, which works to increase equity with and for Minnesota's indigenous, low-income, and racially diverse youth. I'm here opposing the language in 1224 that would eliminate pathways to Tier 2 and Tier 3 license for many future teachers, especially teachers of color. My experience with the education system was traumatic and disengaging. At the age of 12, I was expelled from school and entered the juvenile justice system. The fact that I managed to graduate is due to the one black teacher I had in all my years in high school. My Mr. Walker teaches the Black culture class at North High School. He connected with me on a personal level when I was struggling to even show up to school. That didn't stop him from reaching out to me with life-changing mentorship. Mr. Walker is a Tier 1 teacher who would not be able to enter Tier 2 and later Tier 3 if this bill passed. If the district can't prove they couldn't find a Tier 3 or 4 teacher, if they did not find a Tier 2, 3, or 4 teacher, then he would be able to continue to be in the classroom. If not, they would be able to take his spot. For Mr. Walker, other current Tier 1 teachers and future Tier 2 teachers, the only way they could stay in teaching is going back to enroll in a traditional teacher education program. These teachers have full-time teaching jobs and families. They might not have the privilege, time, or resources to do that. In that case, they'd have to leave. The bill will impact future teachers that hold Tier 1 or 2 licenses and will make it hard for them to stay in an industry that already lacks teachers of color and will affect them at a disproportionate rate. One of the main arguments I've heard today advocating for this bill is that it will prepare teachers better to be in the classrooms. Everything I learned from Mr. Walker cannot be taught in any portfolio or teacher preparation program. The ability to connect and motivate your students is something that many students of color are left out of. I ask you guys as elected officials to listen to the people you serve. I will say again what I said testifying against this bill in the Senate. The legislators should be celebrating and supporting our teachers of color, not raising barriers that might force them out of teaching. Thank you.
Thank you for acknowledging teaching is also an art, because it is. You're right. With that, next up, we have Caitlin Snyder, and then Colette McClure, and then Crystal Brackey, and then Claire Luger.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Caitlin Snyder with Education Minnesota. I am here today to speak in favor of all of the bills in front of you. As a package, these bills open up a number of different routes into Tier 1 that do not currently exist, and the conforming changes also allow new paths into Tier 2 and Tier 3 pathways. That means if you are currently an arts teacher, a music teacher, a CTE teacher, you have an easier path to Tier 3 than you do under current law. As a union that represents teachers and educators, we have no interest in kicking anyone out of the classroom. We want people to have the skills to stay. And what we're seeing right now are tens of thousands of people licensed to teach in the classroom that have left the profession because they don't feel like they have the tools to be successful. When you enter the profession without demonstrating your pedagogy through licensure via portfolio, alternative teacher prep, or traditional teacher prep, that means you're not taught the standards of effective practice. And that includes mandatory reporting requirements, the teacher code of ethics, items like acknowledging how systemic racism impacts our students, and having affirming our students' gender identity. These are pieces that we want and expect our teachers to have as they are performing in the classroom. Speaking to the financial aspect of the bill, which is all that is in front of the committee today, we appreciate the monetary investment in getting people fully licensed and prepared for the classroom. This can be a very high burden, as a number of people mentioned. Assisting people to the Tier 3 license is important because a Tier 2 license is tied to the district. It does not surprise me to hear principals say that they support Tier 2 licenses remaining as they are. We support people having fully mobile license where they can teach wherever they want and not being tied to the district. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Snyder. Next up, we have Colette McClure, and you're going to have to say your name, so I know I'm pronouncing it wrong.
I'm here. It's Colette McIver.
McIver, thank
looks
you.
Looks like an L. Good morning. My name is Colette McIver. Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for having me. I'm a parent of three kids who attend Minneapolis Public Schools, and I'm here to share a statement from Susan Whitwell, an early childhood special education teacher at Lucy Craft Laney School on the north side of Minneapolis. I am currently a Tier 2 teacher. I have been in the classroom for 2 years and have just completed my graduate credits required to attain my Tier 3 licensure. After 20 years as a professional in fields adjacent to teaching, I decided to pursue my teaching license and chose to move from Minnesota from Boston. I began as a special education assistant in an ECSE classroom in Minneapolis and began a graduate program at St. Thomas to get a license as an ECSE teacher. Moving to a career in teaching had several obstacles, the biggest one being money. Taking a significant amount of time off of work to teach, student teach, or complete field work was not realistic. I applied to be a teacher on a Tier 2 license, which provided a higher wage, but it also provided me a place to put into practice the theories I was learning about in grad school. I received far more support than I would have as a first-year teacher with a license, as I was able to problem-solve, broaden my thinking, and become a better teacher because I was in the classroom doing the work, and also receiving observations from my professors, administration, and mentor teacher. I understand the importance of maintaining the professionalism of teaching. I support the concept that teachers need training and education to be qualified. I think it is a grave mistake to deny the opportunity for Tier 2 teachers to be in the classroom. If we want more licensed teachers, we need to smooth the obstacles to that license. We support the people who make the commitment to go to graduate school or a teacher training program. Those are the people who are your Tier 2 teachers. I would not be able to be in the classroom today as a Tier 2 teacher without this option. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Crystal Brackey and then Claire Luger.
Chair Joachim and members of the committee, thank you. My name is Crystal Brackey, and I am the chair of the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, where I represent Richfield Public Schools and Intermediate District 287 as a board member. I want to thank Representative Hill first for his time and willingness to amend this bill already. We currently have 32 Tier 2 teachers in Intermediate School District 287, and I'm heartened that their pathway to Tier 3 licensure is being preserved. I do still have questions regarding the broader effort to eliminate the Tier 2 to Tier 3 pathway to licensure, and I hope that further amendments will be considered to actually do exactly what Dr. Bailey said in her remarks, which is to take the long view. Instead of making this significant change to our licensure system in a matter of months, let's take the time to thoroughly assess the effectiveness of a system that was just put in place 5 years ago after many years of bipartisan work. Let's especially make sure that the much-needed changes to the portfolio process that are being advanced this session, which I'm so excited about, result in a viable pathway to Tier 3 licensure before we eliminate this pathway. Let's have a process that is designed to both gather and balance the inputs of the multiple stakeholders who are affected by these decisions, students, teachers, and communities. Let's work together on this. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. Just a reminder, Pelsby did testify earlier on, and I feel bad that we're truncating this, but it was a two-year process, I heard, to get to this point. So it wasn't overnight, but we definitely need that. We appreciate the community support of working through that process. Clearly, I haven't had enough coffee today. Next up, we have Crystal Brackey, and then, I'm so sorry, Claire Luger. And Claire Luger, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Yes, my name is Claire Luger. Good morning, Chair and committee members. My name is Claire Luger. I'm a special education teacher for students with emotional and behavioral disabilities in White Bear Lake. Especially in the EBD part of the SPED world, my teaching requires a unique skill set and training to do the job. We aren't just trained in pedagogy. We're trained to de-escalate behaviors, how to differentiate, accommodate, and modify the day for each unique learner, and how to complete the legal paperwork within legal timelines. My job is incredibly rewarding, but it's hard, even with a Tier 4 license and 10 years of building my skill set. And that's after completing my teacher preparation program as a non-traditional single mother. The value of providing accessible training for teachers is real. To ethically place Tier 1 teachers in classroom, they need appropriate preparation. Providing districts with the resources to support Tier 1 teachers will create more competent teachers and will address the very real problem of teacher burnout. When teachers have the resources they need, they're better at their jobs, and they're more likely to stay in the profession, and as a result, student outcomes improve. Additionally, having someone at Pelsby devoted to licensure via portfolio and bringing online the platform up to date will help us address our teacher shortage by reducing a barrier to the entry for non-traditional learners. School districts, charter schools in the state of Minnesota should be supporting teachers by making these pathways affordable, accessible, and workable. We need state grant dollars for districts and charter schools to be used to support teachers through the preparation process, either by paying tuition for robust supports through a portfolio process or the development of an internal Grow Your Own program. If we don't support teachers' access to appropriate training, we will continue to not only lose teachers, but we won't be able to recruit them. This is an investment in our schools, our workforce, and most importantly, our students. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And thank you all to the testifiers that came and shared your words and your stories and your experiences. It's greatly appreciated. That's why I want to make sure that you got your time in today before 12:30. Next up, we have, we'll go roll over right to bills. So we will go to Representative Sensenmura's bill, House File 1137. And as I said, both Dr. Bailey and, sorry, I just lost my spot.
Ms. Vaught,
thank you so much, have testified to all the bills or presented information, but they're still here for clarifying questions from members, and I want to make sure we're giving each of these bills its time, so if you do have questions, please don't hesitate to ask. Representative Sensenmura, go ahead and move your bill before the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. I would like to make a motion that House File 1137 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Education Finance Omnibus Bill.
Thank you, Representative Sensenmura. That's the motion, and we have the bill before us. Proceed.
Yeah, I will shorten my introduction because I think the Pelsby staff did a great job of explaining some of the nuts and bolts of this program. You know, what I will say is that in the past there have been barriers to licensure for these essential heritage language educators. This bill changes that because we know that multilingualism is an asset to Minnesota's K-12 schools. We know that these educators are language keepers. They are cultural preservers. We know that language is essential to culture. And I know myself, my family lost our language and lost our culture through the Japanese internment camps. And I know that that has been really devastating and hard to my people and to our culture. And so I think we should be doing everything we can to support these teachers, to keep them in the classroom, to break down barriers, and to ensure they can stay in the classroom through a pathway to licensure. So with that, I will stand for any questions that folks have. Thank you.
Yes, and members, if you can see here, we don't have a fiscal note, but there is an appropriation, I believe, on the bill. And that's part of our focus, but I also want folks to ask questions. I should have said at the outstart, all these bills already went through Education Policy Committee where they did a deeper dive. We are focused more on the finance piece of here, but if there are some brief questions or clarifying questions for Pelsby or the author on the policy language, please let us know. Representative Pryor.
All right, thank you, Madam Chair. And I might be on that line between policy and finance.
I know sometimes they're like this, so go for it.
So I'm going to try to do focus on the policy, on the finance part of it, but I also wanted to think about, I know that when we introduced it and discussed it, I don't think we talked a lot about indigenous languages. And so just I know that we have, I mean, there's probably not as much funding as we want to do, really what we really want and where we need to be. How do you see this kind of going forward and all of these world languages that are part of Minnesota culture that we want to preserve?
Representative Sensenmura or Ms. Vaught?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I don't necessarily see at least our American Indian educators going through this process because we have a separate statutory authority under 124D.27 and a separate rule that creates a very specific pathway for our Indigenous educators to obtain a license. That rule has currently been updated in partnership with TANEC, and so that pathway is very specific and in place already. I do see this more for Hmong educators, Somali educators, Chinese. So it is a little bit of a distinction, but there is this very specific both federal and state authority in place for our Indigenous educators.
Thank you, Ms. Vaught. Can you say what TANEC is?
Oh, I apologize. The Tribal Nations Education Committee.
Thank you so much. Representative Pryor, follow-up? Any other questions on House File 1137 or comments? Seeing none, closing comments, Representative Sensenmura.
Just thank you. I think this is an important bill that will help us get the educators we need in the classroom to help us preserve language and culture, and I ask for support in the omnibus.
Thank you so much. With that, we'll renew Representative Sensenmura's motion. We'll lay over House File 1137 for possible inclusion in an education finance bill. Next up, your House File 1138. Would you like to move this bill before us with the same intentions?
Yes, I would like to move House File 1138 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the education finance omnibus.
And Representative Sensenmayer, I believe that you have an amendment, the A3 amendment. Would you briefly describe your amendment?
Yes, I would like to move the A3 amendment. This is a largely technical amendment. It clarifies a few things. It clarifies some language about the residency funding. It also clarifies some language about the eligibility for higher education teacher preparation programs. One, I think, important thing that it clarifies is that programs, let's see which line this is. This is 1.13. It clarifies that programs that must ensure that 25% of grant funds are used for BIPOC candidates, candidates of color or American Indian candidates. And it also gives some clarifying language about who the board can enter into a contract with to provide technical assistance.
With that, members, are there any questions on the A3 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The A3 amendment's adopted. Proceed with your comments.
Thank you. So House File 1138 would be a pilot that would support 400 teacher candidates in a year-long student teaching residency experience. This complements the governor's proposal, which does provide student teaching stipends for all student teachers. This is important because we know that in Minnesota, nearly a third of teachers leave the profession within their first 5 years of teaching. As kind of an antidote to that, a residency can set teachers up for success by providing them with a mentor teacher, by providing them with financial support, starting with a $40,000 stipend, district-paid benefits, and free or low-cost tuition during residency. I myself went into a teacher residency program after college that did not pay well, and I had to leave that program as a result of the financial burden. So I know that these kind of programs are incredibly important, especially for the kind of teachers that we are trying to recruit into the classroom, teachers of color that can better reflect our student demographics. So I think this is a great program. I think it's complementing what the governor is already trying to do. You know, teaching is a unique profession, and that in the student teaching experience, we're really asking people to do something that we don't ask any other profession to do, which is to do, you know, an unpaid residency, unpaid work as they are getting the experience they need to be teachers. And so this works to change that. And with that, I will yield for questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Sensenmayer. And members, I just want to also make note, too, that on page 3 of the bill, it has the appropriation, so there didn't need to be a fiscal note. But with that, does anybody have any clarifying questions or questions for the author? Or comments? Seeing none, final comments, Representative Sensenmayer.
Great, thank you. I think this is a great investment in our future teaching workforce. We know that there are huge teacher shortages right now. I think this is one solution to that. One thing that I did forget to mention is that as part of the financial investment for this, it not only is funding for the residency, the teacher going through residency, but also for the mentor teacher who is supporting that teacher. Something that we've heard a lot is that, you know, especially when a teacher of color comes into a school, they are often getting support from another mentor teacher of color, and that's often unpaid emotional labor that that teacher is doing. So this gives a $3,500 stipend to the mentor teacher, which I think is really important to compensate them for that important mentorship and important work they are doing. So I hope that people will support this for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you.
Thank you so much. With that, the chair will lay over House File 1138 for possible inclusion in the education finance bill. Next up, we've got Representative Hill on deck for House File 1257. Representative Hill, would you like to move House File 1257 before the committee?
Thank you, Chair. So moved.
And Representative Hill, I understand you have a House File 83. Amendment labeled 83. Would you briefly explain your amendment?
Will do, and I will rely heavily on Pelsby's staff, Dr. Bailey, to speak to the amendment.
Dr. Bailey.
Yeah, Madam Chair, members of the committee. So this amendment ensures that licensure via portfolio is included in the removing barriers for licensure testing. So that's on lines 1.4 and 1.5.
Thank you, Dr. Bailey. With that, members, any questions on the A3 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. The A3 amendment's adopted, and everybody sounded like they were yawning there. But it's still adopted. With that, Representative Hill, would you like to proceed?
Thank you, Chair Youakim. Members, here over the next few minutes, I will be individually introducing three additional Pelsby bills. Of course, that stands for Minnesota's Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board. In total, these bills will be working together to seek to enhance our professional educator licensing process here in Minnesota. And they also strive to work alongside other legislation, most notably House File 320, to achieve the goal of attracting, hiring, supporting, empowering, and retaining future Minnesota teachers. A group of teachers that we would love to work towards becoming more representative of the students they serve each day with their critically important work in the classrooms around the state. Happy to carry these bills that were carried 2 years ago by Representatives Frazier and 4 years ago here in the House with then Representative Kunish. I've worked to connect and meet with all who have reached out for conversation and meetings on these Pelsby bills. And I want to thank all of our testifiers and guests here today for their moving testimony. With that, I want to talk a little bit about House File 1257. It's entitled The Removing Barriers to Pelsby's Licensure Process. And I want to highlight several key figures to the Removing Barriers bill before we move forward. First of all, this bill will give an exception of the BA requirements for those seeking licensure in the visual and performing arts as well as world languages. Secondly, it will allow for teachers with 3 or more years of experience in another state the ability to obtain a Tier 4 license. This bill also addresses the shortage of substitute teachers here in Minnesota, and we're excited about the opportunity to provide a pathway for some of our ESPs, also known as paraprofessionals, to serve in those sub-vacancies. The bill will also remove the standardized testing requirement previously included. And we'll be hearing more about this element, I think, in our question session here coming up. We currently have 835 prospective Minnesota teachers out there who are ready to enter into the teaching profession in our vacant roles as soon as this particular provision becomes law. I'd also like to note that there have been zero demonstrated correlation between the outcomes of these tests and success in serving students and families within the classrooms of our schools. I also anticipate that there will be many who hold and may raise concerns regarding the utilization of the science of reading in our discussions here today. And moving forward, I'm excited to share that Representative Edelson's High Quality Read Act legislation that continues to move through this chamber will ensure that we have achieve a positive outcome in addressing our state's literacy challenges as we emerge from the pandemic. One last note I've become aware of recently that we worked to include in a previous amendment allows for teachers from the international community who have faced some challenges around the timing of when their licenses are able to be renewed, and that has caused some intensive pressure on their timing for completing federal H-1B visa applications to stay in Minnesota in an effort to serve our students and families. In closing, we look forward to the questions ahead. And with that, Chair Youakim, we can open it up.
Thank you, Representative Hill. And members, I just want to draw your attention to the fiscal note that's in their packets, too, for $77,024 and $77,025. I keep adding zeros. That's good for us, right? But, no, I just want to draw attention to that. And then you also have the study about the testing requirements, too, in this packet. With that, members, Representative Ellison.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We're on 1257, right? This is hard to follow today a little bit. Okay, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Hill. I do want to talk about the testing a little bit, and then I also want to talk about the portfolio. And so the portfolio right now, Representative Bailey, Director Bailey, if you could talk to me about when the portfolio is used. I know we're the Finance Committee, but then I want to talk about the testing piece as well. But tell me when the portfolio is used right now. Is it just Tier 3?
Dr. Bailey.
Madam Chair, Representative Edelson's great question. So it right now is a pathway to get just a Tier 3 license. So that's what's in statute. And it can be used for both initial licensure and additional licensure.
Representative Anderson Pablo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so, Ms. Bailey, then in this bill, tell me how the portfolio is changing and how that's going to change.
Thank you, Dr. Bailey.
So, Madam Chair, members of the committee, this makes no changes to the portfolio. What this bill does is it ensures that if you complete the portfolio, just as if you complete teacher preparation or alternative, whether it's traditional or alternative, that all of those folks have demonstrated meeting standards, so they do not have to take the licensure exams. So it just puts portfolio on the same level with teacher preparation, alternative, and traditional.
Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then if we could talk about the test. So we heard some testimony. I think the superintendent's testimony from Richfield was very powerful. I think when we think about test, there's always that we're creating this new standard. But in terms of literacy, which I've been working on a lot, we have about 50% of our students not reading at grade level, and we've had these teacher tests in life that have been in existence for, I guess I would love you to tell me for how long. And in having those tests, it hasn't improved our literacy outcomes. And so, Madam Chair, and I guess that's my last point, Ms. Bailey could just let me know when we started these licensure tests.
Dr. Bailey.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Edison, great question. So it was instituted in 2010. It was put in statute before, but rolled out in 2010. And since then, we've had a pass rate of 88%. So it's a relatively high pass rate comparatively for other exams as well. And yet, we have the large literacy gap that we have. So all that to say, I think that's one great example of the lack of correlation between student outcomes, effectiveness, and these exams.
Representative Edelson.
One more. Thank you, Madam Chair. And then if you could just, I know that this isn't totally in this bill, but on literacy, you are making a lot of changes at Pelsby, correct?
Dr. Bailey.
Yeah, Madam Chair, members of the committee, another excellent question. So we have instituted an auditing program for all of the teacher prep because people have raised some excellent concerns, and providers themselves are partnering with us in this to do an audit of the science of reading and literacy through all of our teacher preparation programs so that going forward, we are ensuring that we have strong literacy preparation. And then, of course, the provisions in your bill help serve those teachers who are already licensed. So between these two efforts, we believe we have a strong ability to increase literacy in the state.
Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Ms. Bailey. I appreciate all your questions. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for being our literacy experts. With that, are there any other questions on this particular bill, House File 1257? Closing comments.
No, I appreciate the question, Representative Edelson, and in tandem, in total, it is our belief, and you'll hear me close with this as we talk through the other two bills as well, that these pieces of legislation, these bills will allow for more Minnesotans in more diverse Minnesotans to access what they need to achieve a license to teach students in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, I'll lay over 1257 for possible inclusion in the Education Finance Bill. Members, we have a hard stop at 1230, but we do have secured this room again tonight at 6 p.m., and we still have two bills up. So, and I have a bill up at 6. I'm sure other people do, too, so it won't be too long tonight. We'll try to keep it brief. I would like to start the presentation on House File 1268 and then see if we can get through that. So, Representative Kalisha.
Madam Chair, I would not object to doing a hard adjournment at 1230, even if we have to go. I mean, I think we're going to come back for just a couple minutes. And so if you can wrap this up, we'll keep our comments. I'm happy to oblige.
For coming back at 6?
Not for coming back. If we can wrap it up.
Representative Kreisha, I don't feel like we do due diligence to two bills in 5 minutes. We had a lot of testimony, and I want us to be able to have discussion as well. And I know this place is fluid, and we're going to be super flex today. So we will come back at 6. But would you like to start your presentation on 1268?
Thank you, Chair Joachim. Members, I'd like now to introduce House File 1268. The bill seeks to provide clarity by updating some of the technical language included around Pelsby. And it works to enhance the Pelsby board through an updated board structure and size. And the bill also proposes $4,800 annual stipends so that board members are compensated for their important service to this great work. With that, we would open it up for questions.
Thank you, Representative Hill. Members, I also want to note that you also have a fiscal note. Oh, wait, no. We have just double-checking everything here. We have the licensure report in here, the shortage area, and then we will have a fiscal note printed out for tonight. I know there was one. We just missed it in the packet. Ms. Steckel.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. We did receive a completed fiscal note on this item. They just calculated the costs. It's at $5,000 per year.
So the completed fiscal note says $5,000 a year?
Yes, Madam Chair, for a total cost of $10,000 per biennium.
Thank you, Ms. Becker. What we'll do, since we're coming back tonight, we'll still get that printed. Okay. It's in a different packet, or I'm just missing it?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, we have the fiscal note. If you want to see it, ask. Look in your packet. Dr. Bailey, does that seem about right? People looked a little surprised at the fiscal note.
Okay, got it.
Yeah. Dr. Bailey? No?
Yeah. Madam Chair, I think that is for the board stipend part, which was included.
Yes.
I'm not sure for any rulemaking other pieces, but there might not be in this bill. So maybe it's just we have to, for the additional board members to pay for their substitute teachers and things like that, that would be the, I'm assuming that's that calculated cost. I don't have the fiscal note in front of me, but I've done now five of these for these five bills. I think this one is just the board stipends alone. So that would
yes,
be about, that would
is,
be correct.
I believe it says on page line 20.
Perfect. There we go.
10,
I'm happy to give you the smallest fiscal note with this bill versus any other bill.
Thank you. It was actually stuck in your 12 packet for 12-24. So we have the fiscal note in front of us. Thank you for clarifying that. Members, are there any questions on this particular bill? Either the licensure, the testing or the fiscal note or the stipends. Chair Pryor is looking very contemplatively, thinking about a question. Before that, I also want to remind people, could you please put your packets all back together and in your folder? So just the bill we still need to hear. Unless there's something you're dying to keep, put it in your save folder. With that, final comments, Representative Hill, on this bill.
So, Madam Chair and members of the committee, appreciate the questions and look forward to enhancing our board structure to making certain that we have teacher voice involved. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hill. With that, I will lay over House File 1268 for possible inclusion in an education finance bill. Members will be coming back at 6 tonight in this room, and hopefully it will be brief. Please put House File 1224, the green slip, back into your folder, and with that, we are adjourned. Sorry, excuse me. Take that back. We are in recess. Thank you. Good evening. Welcome back to the Education Finance Committee. And thank you for hanging with us. Hopefully this will be a little painless and we can all go out about our business and other committees we're supposed to be in. So with that, we have House File 1224. Representative Hill, would you like to move House File 1224 before the committee with the intention of laying it over for a possible inclusion in education finance bill?
Yes, thank you, Chair. That is the motion.
Thank you. Members, you also have a fiscal note in your packet. No, you don't. That was the old one that was in the wrong packet. So 1224, Ms. Speckle, I'm trying to remember if we needed a fiscal note for this one or if it has a direct appropriation. Oh, it has a direct appropriation, members, on pages 3 and 4. So no fiscal note necessary, but there is an impact that you can see there. With that, Representative Hill, now that I've blathered on, would you like to proceed with your testimony?
Yes, thank you, Chair Joachim, and thanks for joining us again here, committee members. The bill that we're going to speak to tonight, House File 1224, seeks to add support to those who hold licenses as they move through the tiered structure. And I think it's important to note that in total, the three bills that I've brought forth today, this being the third, work to augment and support robust pathways to all who are seeking licensure to teach in Minnesota's public schools. I especially want to note the additional removal of barriers these pathways provide, and again point out that this bill will remove exactly zero current Minnesota teachers from their service to students in their classrooms. Along with these additional pathways, I'm excited to note that as a co-author on Representative Hassan's House File 320, we're seeking to make a historic investment in more than $100 million towards attracting, hiring, retaining, supporting, empowering, and retaining teachers that are more representative of the Minnesota students that they seek to serve. I'm thankful for all the stakeholders who reached out, and I look forward to the continued dialogue here in committee. And I want to point out that many who brought concerns share with me the important goal of increasing the number of teachers of color here in Minnesota. I'm also going to note that they expressed a concern that they or a colleague they know will be suddenly removed from their teaching position due to this bill or one of the other two. And I just want to reassure the committee that this will not happen under House File 1224. 1257 and 1268. With that, I look forward to the discussion here tonight. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hill. And I think what I'm going to have Dr. Bailey do, just because we briefly went over it earlier this morning, is maybe just highlight the fiscal implications that are in this bill. I should say the fiscal investments that you're making and both the portfolio process and in the pathway of preparation grants, and talk briefly about those.
All right. Well, that is quite loud. Madam Chair, members of the committee, it's after the last meeting, I thought I had to be extra close. So in here, there are three sets of funding in the appropriations. So if you'll look first at lines 3.16 and 3.17, that provides a total of $800,000 that would go towards districts so they can get current Tier 2 teachers their Tier 3 license either through enrollment in teacher preparation, whether that's traditional higher ed or an alternative provider, or licensure via portfolio, so through mentorship and the licensure via portfolio process. I will say currently we have about 1,100 Tier 2 teachers who are not enrolled in prep or haven't completed teacher preparation, so that $800,000 is enough for each of those individuals alone to go through licensure via portfolio. As was mentioned by Representative Hill, I know in combination, the additional $12 million in HF 320 for the CUGMIC grant would be more than enough to put all of those individuals of color through teacher preparation as well. So there's funding, a combination for these efforts to cover those folks. Looks like, do I need to stop? I hear.
We're going to have an adjustment on the mics real quick, just so there's not as much feedback.
Thank you. Yeah.
So. Okay. I think that's. Yeah, try that.
Test that. Is that better?
Thank you.
Oh, that's great. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I don't enjoy hearing my own voice and feedback back to me, so thank you. I don't know that anyone enjoys hearing their own voice on a recording. So that's cover that. So the $800,000 is enough to go directly to districts for their Tier 2 teachers to support them in enrollment teacher preparation, traditional teacher preparation, alternative preparation, or licensure via portfolio. And again, that is enough for all of the 1,100 teachers who are not enrolled or completed preparation in Tier 2 to go through licensure via portfolio. It would cover it and make it free to them. On line 4.3, there is $50,000 to support through the online platform. So we are currently, we've piloted with an online platform. This is a very small amount to help streamline that and continue that process. Given the interest and the growth we've seen and how much more successful people are at applying through this online platform, this would be the beginning of ideally this being kind of a state online platform that could help folks make that a very accessible and viable platform. And then finally, in lines 4.9 and 4.10, there are about $300,000 to fund new positions. That's over 2 years, so that's benefits, space, things like that, to fund a staff member that would be dedicated specifically to supporting these folks in getting their pathway, their position through the licensure via portfolio. So one of the items that you've often heard from testifiers or questions is
the historic difficulty around the licensure via portfolio. So this would dedicate someone specifically to walking through navigating the licensure standards and structure, through creating and developing their portfolio, through meeting the standards, so giving them that guided work. So it's not just figure out the system and get through it. This funding together works to cover the costs, cover the support, and get people moving up that those tiers.
Thank you. With that, members, do we have any questions or comments? I actually have the first one for Dr. Bailey. When you talk about that licensure via portfolio money towards a position, I hope that we're starting to maybe, hopefully you're thinking about ways to also get out into the community, into the schools, to look at the districts that might have a larger percentage of tier one and two and hold workshops on site so that we're not just waiting for them to call us. That would be something I'd kind of like to see going toward that. I know finally getting an extra person there does help with the staffing that it takes to help someone go through the process, but it would be nice along with those grants the districts are getting to, if a district doesn't get a grant but has a large portion of tier one and two, that maybe we can bring some of the support to them. It's just a thought. So yeah. With that, I've got Representative Altendorf.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Hill, and thank you for presenting this. I had a question. I think it's I lost my notes here. So for Dr. Bailey, I think you had said that this is not disproportionately impacting teachers of color. But if my statistics are correct, that in the last 5 years, we've had 17 teachers of color that have moved from tier two to tier three pathway, and that is a larger percentage.
Dr. Bailey.
Yeah, Madam Chair, members of the committee. So what I said is that in context, the number isn't disproportionate. So we have 17 individuals who've used this pathway. Those are 17 individuals who deserve to be in the classroom. We want them to have supports. We also want them to have the training to meet the standards. But that's 17 out of the tens of thousands of teachers of color that we have in our current classrooms. That's what I'm saying. It isn't a disproportionate amount. So, for example, people will often discuss Tier 1 and Tier 2 does a great job of getting teachers of color in the classroom. About 28%, I believe, of our Tier 2 teachers are teachers of color. It's 28% of about, I would say, 2,000, so we're talking about a few hundred folks, right? Versus, again, the tens of thousands of teachers of color that currently hold a tier three and tier four teacher. So I just was giving that context to say it's not a disproportionate amount number-wise of our teachers of color. It is a higher proportion of that tier, if that makes sense. But that tier represents a very small makeup of our entire teaching profession in the state.
Representative Altendorf, follow-up.
Thank you. Yeah. However, with the numbers, we're showing that teachers of color are really, they're using this pathway, and they're using it successfully, you know, to get to that next level. So I would just want us to keep that in mind, that, you know, if this is our goal to increase teachers of color, that we shouldn't be shutting down a pathway that they're using right now. So that really concerns me, because it goes against what I feel like some of our goals are on this committee. And then, you know, as a comment, because one of the testifiers, and I am so sorry, I was taking notes earlier, but I don't remember who testified. You know, but she just specifically had said during her testimony that, you know, why the rush? Because we took years and years to get this licensure program in place. And now at this time of being at a shortage of teachers, and it truly is critical. I mean, I hear this all the time from the school districts. It's really a sad situation. And so my question, you know, to Representative Hill is, what is the urgency, and what is this going to achieve instead of waiting and making sure we're doing this correctly?
Representative Hill.
Thank you, Chair Joachim, and thank you for the question, Representative. A couple of things. Number one, as far as the duration of time that passed that brought our tiered system into being, I have a different perspective on how long that took. That was, in my estimation and my understanding, was that was a compromise that was rapidly put in place at the end of the 2017 session. Mm-hmm. Secondly, these bills in total seek to provide supports to ensure that teachers are equipped and supported and move forward towards a lengthy and successful career. We continue to see many teachers leaving the profession in those first few years, and we want to make sure that our teachers entering the profession stay and serve students and families over a long term.
Representative Altendorf, hello.
Thank you. No, those are my questions, but I am, you know, and again, you know, please, I am very, very concerned with the shortage of teachers, that we are not, you know, taking potential teachers out of the pool right now. I don't think the timing is right. And I don't see, if you weigh pros and cons, I really, really don't see the pros of this bill. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Representative Sensenmura.
Thank you. So I know that, you know, we heard from, I think, Dr. Bailey about how, you know, that one of the reasons that we want teachers to have kind of either the portfolio process or go through the teacher preparation process is so that to retain them in the classroom, right? So I think right now with our workforce shortage, we're facing two issues, right? We're facing the recruitment issue, but then what I'm hearing from the data that you all have is that we have a retention issue with teachers of color, right? So we both have the issue of trying to get people of color into the classroom, but then we have a bigger issue, it sounds like, of retaining them. And it sounds like the problem that this is trying to solve is that retention piece. But I also know that, you know, from my own conversations with people, people leave the classroom for lots of different reasons that we're talking about in this committee, you know, and obviously you all have a narrow lane for what you can focus on, but what, I guess, what data do you all have that shows that one of the reasons people are leaving could be solved by different or better preparation? Thank you.
Representative Hill or Dr. Bailey?
Yeah, Madam Chair, members of the committee, that's an excellent question. So there's a few factors, and we actually did a survey to teachers who are all teachers, but also focusing on teachers who are licensed in Minnesota and are not in the classroom, which is about 50, 60,000 teachers, to get a sense of why they're not in the classroom. And it was pretty much the same as what we see in national trends. So issues are, you know, not having adequate preparation, not having issues with school climate, you know, autonomy. Pay shows up in there as well. And so this is one measure, but I, again, if you take these bills together, two items that are on the table, one of them is in your bill, is we know that there is ample research that teacher residency programs help with retention, particularly teachers of color, and especially Black and Latinx educators, right? The other item is that we have ample national research that shows that we have a lower attrition rate for educators that have received preparation, because they are then not, I'm preaching to the choir with many educators here, people who are involved in school systems. There's a lot you encounter on that first day or through those first few years in the classroom that you're, you know, not going to be prepared for. But if you're dealing with that on top of not having pedagogical training, on top of not having, you know, the skill set to research and figure out and problem solve as you're going along, that's going to layer on that burnout. And these folks leave within 3 to 5 years. So this bill is dealing with one of those three elements, right? That preparation piece. Your bill deals with, you know, kind of innovative programs like residencies. And then finally, school climate is in, Representative Hill mentioned in HF 320. You all funded the last several years multi-million dollar funding in our teacher mentorship and retention grant. We have heard from, anecdotally, districts across the state that that is doing tremendous work to help with mentorship and retention, that school climate, having people, affinity groups, mentors in their buildings. So I just want to affirm that this bill, along with the other pieces that are being proposed and being done, are addressing these problems. I think often that big picture work gets lost in these conversations. And if I could squeeze in one last thing, I just wanted to reiterate on the data piece. We have had 5 years of data on tier licensure. We've had thousands of teachers come in and get tier 2 licenses. And of those, 99 use that pathway. So overwhelmingly, people who get a tier 2 license aren't actually staying. Like, a lot of them come in for a couple years and they leave the profession. I think it's a great door, but I think that, again, the long view is how do we keep them, right? I'm not saying tier 2 doesn't serve a purpose, right? These are great educators, but how do we keep them for 10, 20, 30 years?
Thank you, Representative Sensenmura. Follow-up? Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That when I wanted to make my comments and ask my question, then I heard some of the earlier comments about 2017. I was there in 2017. It was not this room, but it was another room in the SOB. And I remember in 2017 when this was brought forward, this was very much data exactly saying what the doctor has just said. That we know going into it that this was not likely to be a very robust way of recruiting and retaining teachers, and that was always the concern. I voted against doing it at that time, and and the only at the end I did vote for a bill, an education bill, that actually had funding for schools, and that was the compromise. And what I want to bring up is that even in that bill, I don't think that we truly funded this function of licensing teachers. And what I wanted to say is I'm so glad that we are no longer in policy and we can talk about money. Yeah. because what you just described of how we need to roll out and make robust the portfolio system, which we did not fund in 2017, and we are doing now. And so that is the difference. We are solving a problem. We are addressing the retention of high quality, motivated teachers that are engaging with students. We are helping to retain them with this bill. And teachers of color, most importantly, is what we keep lifting up. And that we are doing it, one of the reasons we are doing it is because we're funding it this time. So I think, Representative Hill, I think your total package makes a lot of sense, and it would have made sense in 2017, too.
Thank you, Representative Pryor. And what I'd want to add, too, and this is another bill that we've been hearing for years and not having funded well enough, is our Teacher of Color and Indigenous Act. So that is really where the funding and the focus is on getting more teachers of color in the classroom. These sets of bills are making sure we have qualified teachers in the classroom who have support and are able to stay there. So they work together in concert. So I know there's been a lot of focus on teachers of color in these Pelsby bills, where the focus really is on TOCAT. Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Dr. Bailey, for coming back tonight. I have a question, and I know I've actually asked you this question a few months ago when Pelsby did their overview, but I think it would be important now, given this bill, to think about this. I've heard complaints about how we used to do the portfolio, how the portfolio worked, and I know it has changed. I'm wondering if you could talk about what goes into making the portfolio, what that presentation looks like, and why that fits in with the Tier 3 license.
Dr. Bailey, since we're putting money into that process, it'd be nice to know what's changed with that money.
Absolutely. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I welcome the opportunity to talk about this, because I will agree, and I think it's worth acknowledging where there is room for growth. And historically, the portfolio, it's been underfunded, and it hasn't served the function that it needs to. So in the past year, we made a few pretty big changes. One, reallocation of staff. Two, debuting this online platform. And three, some policy changes that, again, we work with teacher prep, so the same thing works for them, to recognize content expertise to help meet content standards. So whether you're in teacher preparation or portfolio, you have to demonstrate meeting your content standards for your licensure area, and then if it's an initial license, your pedagogical standards. Typically, if you're going into teacher preparation, let's say you want to get a master's, and you have a bachelor's degree in physics, I'll say that for myself, because I am not going to be a physics teacher, but if I wanted to be, that degree would count for content standards, right? But I would need to do a portfolio to show the pedagogical standards. That would mean if I were teaching on a Tier 2, I could take lesson plans I'm creating, assessments from my, you know, principal, my administrator, submit those. Pelsby does not review those. We put those out to teacher experts that say, oh, you're right, your lesson plan is demonstrating you're implementing this pedagogical expertise. You're meeting these standards. You get approved, and then you move forward. Again, I admit that a lot of these are recent changes, and I think part of it is us being able to communicate that. We've changed the staffing so that the person who works with our teacher preparation providers, who has that expertise in those standards and does program and unit review, is now the person overseeing portfolio, so that the same policies and support can be applied to all individuals seeking our pathways, whether it's through teacher preparation or an innovative pathway like portfolio. That's one big change. The online platform, again, it's a pilot, and we didn't want to, you know, ask for too much money this year. This will help us inch, but not quite get there. It's been a tremendous pilot because previously you had to bring either a physical folder, which is a lot for people to put together, or a flash drive, and then you have to pass the flash drive around to staff members. And we are in 2023, so we managed to do this online, so you can upload your lesson plans, upload your evaluations, things like that. Take videos of yourself teaching and have that be reviewed, right? We want this to be manageable and accessible for folks. So those are some of the changes. And ideally, you know, with the investment, this is something we can continue to grow. One thing that
the person working with us is trying to pilot and we'd like to see grow is that working with districts, because they partner with districts on the same online platform. So if you complete a professional development in the science of reading in, you know, Stillwater, and you're seeking your elementary license, that cross-references to meet all the standards for reading, so you don't have to reproduce that work. So there's some things with technology and an investment that we can start to do that really will make this even better. But so far, we're doing our best with the resources available to us, and a lot of it is, again, implementation, staffing, better communications. But there's things that were mentioned, like how do we go out to districts and have a staff member that can work directly with these folks. I floated to my staff the idea this summer, depending on what happens at the legislature, of having that new staff member being able to hold a year-long work with CTE educators, because we know that that's an area, right? And then a separate year-long mentorship with teachers of color. How do we guide them through this process? Because part of it is, you know, the government sometimes can be a little confusing and bureaucratic for folks, but if we have people that can help you do that, that's our job in public service. So I'll get that off my
Thank you. Representative Greenman. Representative
Altidore,
if you have another one.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I just had one more question. I'm going back to Dr. Bailey again. I believe, did you just mention or testify that tens of thousands of teachers of color are in tiers three and four in Minnesota? I thought that's what you said.
Representative Dr. Bailey, sorry, I almost demoted you.
Yeah, Madam Chair, members, again, we have thousands. So we have about 60,000 teachers working in our classrooms in the state of Minnesota. And of those, about 6% are teachers of color. So let me do quick math. 6%, about 3,600. Does that put us at about? Yeah, so a few thousand. And that's in the classroom. And then if you look at licensed teachers who aren't in the classroom, it's a lower percentage but a higher amount. So that's 5% of 113,000. So, yeah, about 5,500. Quick math at the table.
Thank you, Dr. Bailey. Thank you, Madam Chair. I am asking because I had looked at the 2023 biennial report, and according to this, there's 1,000 Black and 1,000 Hispanic teachers that are in levels tiers 3 and 4, and that includes the teachers that are not in the classrooms. So that's quite a bit significantly less than what you're saying. So it didn't, I think originally you said tens of thousands, and according to the biennial report, it was, and this is 2023, I mean, this is, so we're talking 1,000 Black teachers and 1,000 Hispanic teachers.
Dr. Bailey?
Yeah, Madam Chair, members of the committee, if I did say that earlier, hopefully my quick math now is a helpful correction. So again, that 6% of about 60,000 is 3,600 or so teachers of color. Sounds like about 2,000 at what you're looking at of those 3,600 are Black and Latinx, and then the other, what does that leave me at? Goodness gracious. 1,600 are going to be across our other indigenous, Asian, you know, Hispanic, other groups as well. So the contrast here, though, is to say of our 113,000 licensed teachers, again, 5% teachers of color, that's few thousand in contrast to the 17 individuals is what I'm giving. That's the context that I'm trying to frame for you all.
Okay. Thank you. Just one more. Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Altidore.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay, thank you so much. I'm just trying to get all this straight. And do you know how many total teachers then of color have been approved by the licensure, by the portfolio, you know, for this program?
Yeah, Madam Chair, members, again, I don't have that data in front of me, but that's the data point we could certainly try to pull for you.
Okay.
Representative Altidore.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So my concern, too, is, you know, we also really lack male teachers. And so I would like to know, like, how many Black male teachers, how many Hispanic male teachers, you know, because this is an area that I feel like, again, we just want to make sure that moving forward, that we are not in unintended consequences leaving out teachers of color that would use this method at all. So that's my concern. I just want to make sure that our goals and then this bill is actually achieving the goals that we want. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Altendorf. I'm very glad we're going to be putting some big investments into a Teachers of Color and Indigenous Act as well. Representative Krisha, I think you have the final word down there.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And welcome to be back to the basement room, boys.
I know, isn't it weird?
Such good memories. Representative Hill, thank you for bringing your bill up. So I'll say, as I say this, what you're doing is you're taking on a big task. And the comments that I'm going to make are in no way indicative of your efforts, whether they'll be successful or not. But what I see is we are facing a people problem that, frankly, I don't think any legislation is going to be able to solve. We have this people problem across every single workforce, every single industry. And there's a lot of reasons why teachers lead, and they're not just, it's not going to show up in spreadsheets. I will tell you that in some of the areas that I work with, as we go out and do workforce recruiting, one of the biggest group that we recruit is teachers, because oftentimes they're very knowledgeable, very experienced, very loyal, very competent, very professional, and they translate into other industries very easily. And so it's not that I believe that teachers are leaving because they don't have the right training. I think that early training can help, but they're leaving for lots of reasons. One of the reasons that they're leaving is probably management. I've learned a long time ago in all the management and all the people that I've trained and hired, people don't leave companies, they leave people. They leave their direct supervisors, and they leave the conditions that are in there because of the stress. And as a teacher and in other areas, and this is across the board, I mean, I can talk broadly for any workforce, but if you're good at what you do, if you are really good at what you do, let's go back to teaching for a second. I go back to my days. If you're really good at what you do, every time you come to work, you leave a little bit there with a kid, or you leave a little bit there with your job, and eventually your tank is empty. The really good educators, the really good administrators, they hit a burnout because they leave their soul there with those kids. And there's, I'm sorry to tell you, there is no bill, there's no amount of money that's going to fill that back up. You're not going to repair people that are leaving who they are with the kids that they teach. And so I applaud many of the things that you're trying to do. I think we're trying to solve issues, but I just don't think we can do that. I think we can provide money and hope for the best and hope that we can get more people in the door. And, I mean, many of us in here, if you've been in schools, you've been with good teachers, they come from all walks of life. Some of my best teachers had horrible spelling and grammar, but boy, they could teach me about life, or they could teach me about things that were so far outside of that. And so I think we put too much emphasis on the academic side of it and not the life expectancy and the learning, the life experience and the learning. Because many of these high school students, we just need to get them through and show them the possibilities and have good mentors so that they can develop that potential. Our best teachers that I worked with, the best mentors that I had, their life experiences were not at all through college. Now, I've had some really good academic ones. I've seen some good ones come through college. But I think what we're trying to do in Representative Hill, I think you have some great noteworthy provisions and the whole piece in here. But I think that at the end of the day, if we're going to close doors to people that could develop potentially, or we're going to lower standards, or we're going to put some demographics out because of this, I think that would be an approach that wouldn't work. And I would caution you against that. Honestly, I think that a system where we get more people in the door with more good administrators, with more good mentors that develop people in those districts is a better solution than hoping we can do it at the top with some type of licensing. I really do. No offense to Pelsby, but I think bureaucracy and licensing holds a lot of people out of this profession. Try to enter this profession after you've been out 10 years. Which is funny, because right now I can tell you I could be really good in a lot of areas, but the amount of paperwork and bureaucracy for me to get back in a classroom, not worth it. So I wish you well. I do. I think that you're trying to attack a problem, but I think that we are missing a lot of the people problem that we have. I think we're trying to take the people out of this equation, and at the end of the day, we're just people. And people have emotions, they have stress, and they have all sorts of things. And there is no amount of portfolio that's going to fix that. We just don't have enough people. And that's across the board. So like I said, I'm glad we're having these conversations. I think they're great, and I'm seeing there's going to be some money behind it. But I also think that we have to be very realistic about the problem itself that's in front of us. So I wish you well. Good luck. I'm sure we'll see more in the final bill.
Thank you. With that, Representative Hill, final comments.
Yes, thank you, Chair Joachim. Thank you, committee members. Really appreciated the dialogue here tonight. And I got a signal earlier, hoping people can hear me all right there. This is a problem to be solved, and so I really appreciate Representative Kreisha, you know, bringing that up. And respectfully, you and I have had very different experiences with many of the folks that I've worked alongside of in education, many of the best teachers and the best mentors that I've had. To my knowledge, very few of them feel burned out by the service and commitment they have to their students. Quite honestly, they get burned out and stressed because of the lack of resources that we have put forth into public education, the lack of supports, and in some cases, due to nobody's fault in this space, I'm sure, a lack of respect at times. And so as we move forward, looking to support, to empower, to equip, and ensure that our teachers that are placed into our classrooms are ready to go and ready to serve kids with quality for long careers, and so that they too can feel the things that I've felt as an educator, to be buoyed, to be fulfilled, and to be excited to be back tomorrow. So thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Representative Hill. And with that, we will lay House File 1224 over for possible inclusion in the Education Finance Bill. Members, tomorrow we will be back in our regular room at 10:30 in the Capitol. We are adjourned.